This is Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. A little later in the hour, a conversation with inventor, technologist, and author Ray Kurzweil. But first, some interesting and important news updates. Last week, a prominent South Korean researcher in the field of human cloning and stem cells announced that he would seek to withdraw one of his papers from the journal Science following allegations of impropriety. At the time, the researcher, Hwang Woo-suk, said that he would seek to republish the work in another journal to clear his name. But now, an investigative panel at Seoul National University, where Dr. Hwang worked, is charging that the paper was, quote, an intentional fabrication, that he had fabricated data to make two lines of cells look like 11 lines for the paper. Dr. Hwang, the News Today shows that there's an announcement. Dr. Hwang has resigned from the university in disgrace. Joining me now for an update is NPR science correspondent Joe Palka, who's been following the case. Thanks for joining us, Joe.
Sure, Ira.
It didn't look so grim for Dr. Hwang last week. We heard a lot about this, but it seems to be pretty grim for him today.
Yeah, this report is pretty harsh on him. Mm-hmm. It leaves very little room for very little room for him claiming that this was an accident or an oversight or something like that. Basically, you remember what made this paper so amazing to scientists is that he was able to make 11 stem cell lines from 11 different individuals using the cloning techniques. That's what he said anyway. Mm-hmm. And now they say, well, okay, two of the lines they can't find any record of at all. Four of the lines were contaminated in January, and three of the lines were never really established. You know, it turns out you can get cells out of a blastocyst, and that's how you make embryonic stem cells, but you then have to actually get them to start growing, and that never happened, apparently. So, yes, as you say, the data for all 11 lines apparently comes from just two lines, and the question now is, were those stem cell lines cloned, or were they just embryonic stem cells that were made from spare embryos from fertility clinics, which is not trivial, but it's not anything like a scientific breakthrough.
It seemed from reading the news accounts today, he made a statement, but he's still sort of maintaining his innocence that he will be proven in the long run.
Well, okay. I think the distinction here, if I can make it, and I'm not sure I can really speak for Dr. Hwang because I've talked to him in the past, but I haven't been able to get in touch with him in recent weeks. But I think the distinction is, and this comes from talking to people who have visited his lab, everyone who's visited his lab says there's no question that he has the techniques and the personnel and the skill to do what he says he did. In other words, he's got the micromanipulators, he's got the supply of eggs or oocytes, he's got the kind of culture conditions. You know, these are not scientists who can be fooled on that score. What he hasn't done is actually put it all together, at least not according to this mm-hmm. paper. So when he says he may be vindicated, it sounds to me like what he's saying is, look, I can do this, and I've come very close to doing this, and I will be able to prove that I did this. But there's no way that he's going to be able to say that this science paper is anything but apparently a largely made up piece of work.
Right. So his laboratory still exists, but he's no longer working there. Would that be safe to assume?
Well, yes, although I'm told actually that technically he can't resign until the investigation is complete, but he certainly announced his intention to resign. Mm-hmm. And whether the lab goes forward and who's going to fund it and what it's going to do, I think are all questions that haven't quite been resolved yet. But the government of South Korea says it remains convinced that biotechnology and perhaps even this area of biotechnology is something that Korea should be investing in. And so I don't think it's going to go away completely, but I don't think they're going to keep the name because they named one of the buildings after him.
And he was a national hero, was he not?
Oh, it's hard for someone in America, I think, to appreciate. how much of a national hero and how much attention this has been getting in America. I mean, try to imagine a televised news conference with an American scientist where everybody in the country is watching it on TV live.
Yeah.
It's just hard to conceive of.
Back to the Jonas Salk days of polio vaccines.
Well, yes, like exactly. I mean, that's probably as good an example as there is, that people were gathered around the radios in those days. But yes, quite stunning.
What happens next? Where do we go from here? All his research is called into question, the dog supposedly that he cloned and
right.
Things like
well,
that.
Well, that's exactly right. So the current investigation has been focused on the 2005 paper that allegedly produced the 11 lines that we've been talking about. But obviously there's two other famous papers that came out, one this year, which was Snuppy, the Seoul National University puppy. Which is an alleged it's funny, we have to say this. I mean, how often, Ira, do we say the alleged finding? I mean, it's just very strange to say that in the scientific world. We tend to take scientific results on face value and you know, argue about what they mean, but not whether they were made up. But
if you're talking about cold fusion, you would say the alleged finding.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So, but now we have to say that this the clone dog is going to be looked at very carefully, and also the very first paper, because as you remember, a year ago, it was Wang's lab that was the first to say we were able to create a single embryonic stem cell line from a cloned embryo, and that was the first that was the breakthrough that put Dr. Wang on the scientific map. I mean, he was known for having done animal cloning. And he is a veterinarian, as you probably know, but he hadn't worked with human cells up until then, or he hadn't published his work on with human cells, at least not the cloned human cells. And so this was an amazing and enormous breakthrough. And, of course, now that's open to question.
Mm-hmm. Well, Joe, thank you for taking time to talk with us. I know you'll be following it, and we'll be following up with you. Thank you.
Absolutely. You're welcome, Ira.
Joe Palca, NPR science correspondent, reporting from Washington. We're going to turn now from new DNA to old DNA, actually old enough to be coming from back to the Ice Age. Two papers published this week. Take a look at the genetic makeup of the woolly mammoth. You've seen that in the museums, the woolly mammoth standing there. One published in the journal Nature, the other in the journal Science, and the two groups take different approaches to the genetic material of this Ice Age mammal. And joining me now is Ross McPhee. He's curator in the Division of Vertebrate Zoology and Mammalogy at the American Museum of Natural History here in New York, and one of the authors of the Science paper. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Ira. Thanks.
You found that the woolly mammoth shares 98% of its DNA with African elephants?
Well, even that figure is probably a little low.
Really?
The estimate that we published had to do with the comparisons to the African elephant, the whole genome of which is publicly available. There are problems with ancient DNA that come under the general heading of damage, and it's possible we would have had alignments going up to 99% or even a little bit better, which is actually what you expect. They're very closely related animals.
But even yet, you know, when we talk about chimpanzees and humans, they're over 98% alike, but that 2% really makes a big difference.
Doesn't it, though?
Yeah. Would that be the same thing here?
Yes, undoubtedly. The Leipzig group, the Max Planck group that published the mitochondrial genome of mammoths, came up with the finding, which I don't think anyone in my community would doubt, which is that the Asian elephant and the mammoth are each other's closest known relative, and a little bit more distant is the African elephant, or the two species of African elephant. But there's no question that overall these three elephants, they're all elephants, are extremely similar to one another.
Interesting. How did you dig out the DNA? Did it come out of the fossils or the remains? Actually, it wouldn't be fossilized at this point, would it?
Well, in our case, the paper that we published was really not about relationships. It was instead to show how you could use some new technology called a genome sequencer in order to generate literally millions and millions of base pairs, which is sort of our currency for comparison. And not only did we get mitochondrial DNA, but we also got lots of nuclear DNA. And that's really, if there is a single breakthrough to talk about here, it's the fact that we can get so much information now from material that is literally tens of thousands of years old. This is unprecedented.
Wow. Well, but you know, the next question we'll ask is, if you're getting this nuclear DNA out of a woolly mammoth dug up out of the frozen tundra, can you clone one, make a new one?
I knew you'd ask that.
If I didn't ask it, I'd have to be fired, so, you know.
Well, I feel pretty strongly that it's a very bad idea to think in terms of cloning the mammoth. That's the phrase we use, although actually, even if it were possible, we would probably not be cloning a single individual. Instead, what we probably can do in future would be to create hybrids. This would be a question of, first of all, determining for something like 3 billion base pairs how the Asian elephant and the woolly mammoth differ. Then we'd have to construct genes to inject into a germline of a living elephant. And then at the end of the day, what would we have? We would have a single individual, a nice little furry pup, with nobody else to go with, to be with. And it's a problem that is almost exactly parallel to the issue faced by Frankenstein's monster.
Right.
When the good doctor created him, he wasn't thinking in terms of what the monster was most interested in, which of course was love. So in that particular case, he had to get the doctor to agree to create a female for him so that the line could continue, whether you think that's a good thing or a bad thing. But we would have to do something parallel, just ethically, I think we would have to do something parallel. If you're going to start on this road, then you have to follow it to the end.
So no one, and you don't think anybody should start on this road, though?
I think it would cost millions of dollars. Nobody's thinking in terms of what do you do with the newly recreated mammoths. Where are they going to live? Who's going to take care of them? What's our stewardship responsibilities? Right now we're talking about reintroducing lions and cheetahs and whatnot from Africa and other places into North America because their relatives existed back in the Pleistocene. That's fine, but once you've got the Pleistocene Park, as it were, back again, who's going to take care of these animals?
Yeah,
there's going to be a lot fewer poodles and cats, I can tell you, if it ever happens.
Yeah, and you just don't want to put them in a zoo. That wouldn't be the right thing.
Not according to my lights.
Okay. Ross McPhee, I want to thank you very much for taking time to talk with us.
Thank you, Ira.
And good luck and congratulations to you on your genetics work there.
Thanks.
Ross McPhee is the curator in the Division of Vertebrate Zoology and Mammalogy right here in New York at the American Museum of Natural History. We're going to take a short break, come back, and talk with Robert Kurzweil. He's always interesting to talk to. And I'm sorry, Ray Kurzweil. I got Robert on the mind. Well, sorry, Ray. We'll be right back after this short break, and he can berate me right on the air for this mistake. We'll take your calls and talk to him. We'll talk with him about his new book, which is called "The Singularity Is Near: When Humans Transcend Biology." Stay with us. We'll be right back. I'm Ira Flatow. This is Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News.